impatient. We're trying to, here at the Bike Lab, we're trying to set up a little bit of a media studio in one of the rooms, but it just happens to be the one room that our podcast equipment has a loud hum.
That's so, okay.
We're out here in the bar area.
That is totally okay. Could allow for more interaction. You never know.
You know what? We will have some interruptions, but they'll be the pleasant kind, right?
Pleasant interruptions. So
what's
absolutely.
What's it like being a new dad?
Man, it's been, excuse me, it's been such an eye-opening experience, man. I mean, it just, your whole life changes whenever you hold your baby for the first time.
Go ahead and stop. Sorry. Had a write error, which means it stopped recording. So we will start over.
No, you're good.
That's why I wanted to form. Now recording. We'll just ask that question again. So, Evan, your wife had your child.
I know. It's pretty crazy.
Pretty
crazy how that happened.
So you went through that whole process, having a baby.
Yes. Yes, I did.
Not, you actually didn't.
I personally did not have
no. It's funny fact. Two genders in the world, right?
Yes.
Funny fact.
Men cannot have babies.
They cannot. Not yet. Hopefully never.
Hopefully
never. Though I have eaten enough to feel pregnant. But anyone that's been pregnant is going to yell at me right now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No.
But you're a new dad. Agree. What's that been like, man? And in being a new dad in the midst of your first year as a professional cyclist,
yes. Yeah, it's been such a crazy just last couple of months. So we had Ellis on July the 5th of this year, and it came at a time I had gotten through the first part of my season, which was basically Speed Week all the way through U.S. Mm-hmm. Amateur Nationals out in Virginia.
Yeah,
and I had a couple people ask me, like, "Hey, you know, you're gonna go out and do Pro Nats?" And I was just like, we were probably 2 or 3 weeks out from Maddie's due date, and mm-hmm. I felt like it was too close for comfort, and mm-hmm. so I made a judgment call on that. But hopefully we'll be able to do U.S. Pro Nationals this coming season, mm-hmm. should the stars align there. But yeah, no, it came at a time where it was my mid-season break anyway, so I took some time away, mm-hmm. Obviously, and just wanted to be there for Maddie, and just, you know, help out as much as I could. I was able to take 3 weeks off of work and just kind of be at home.
Yeah.
Be at home and help. And
because even though you're a pro, you have a job.
I do. I have a full-time job. I'm a registered nurse. And but my schedule, to the point, since I work 3 days a week, it allows me to dedicate four days. And some on work days as well, just to allow me to put in the training hours needed to be able to compete at this level. But going back to what you were saying about you know, having this kiddo, man, it has opened my eyes so much about how it has changed my entire perspective on life.
Yeah,
and for the better.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes you realize that you are not the only person in this world.
No,
who needs you, and so having
it changes it.
Oh, it does. It totally. And so having someone who is fully and 100% dependent on me mm-hmm. to provide and to for literally feeding and, you know, changing diapers, changing clothes, everything like that, it kind of puts it in perspective for you quick.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've learned so much about myself during this time about how can I better serve my wife in this time? How mm-hmm. can I help my child mm-hmm. grow? And so that's kind of been my mentality moving forward, but it's changed my entire outlook on life. And
so,
it's been absolutely wonderful.
Something, good you didn't expect.
Something good I didn't expect. One of my probably my favorite thing throughout the day right now, when I am off work, is when Maddie's one who loves to get up early and go out and, you know, mm-hmm. do 10, 15 mile runs. She's training for the Tulsa Marathon right now. So that's what she's been doing.
Sounds easy.
Yeah. She puts me to shame sometimes with the amount of training that I once could do when I was a long distance runner, but I've totally 100%.
You know, you want to enjoy life.
Oh, yeah. So you want to enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah. So you don't run.
Yeah. Not anymore, at least.
Yeah.
But what my favorite thing that I've enjoyed doing is waking her up in the morning for that first feed, because that's her and I time.
That's you. Yeah.
That's father-daughter time.
Yeah.
Like, it's been, That's probably my favorite part of the day right mm-hmm. now is just being able to sit and just hold my baby and just give her her morning breakfast and just allow her to digest and just sit and look at her. That's one of my favorite things, because it's literally a tiny human that you and your wife created that has so many of the same characteristics that mm-hmm. you have. You're just like, oh my gosh, this is not necessarily a clone of me, but pretty dang close.
It's literally what it is, except we're not. It's a mixture. Right?
A mixture. And it's been such an incredible experience, and I'm just super super grateful to have the opportunity. Yeah. And it has changed my perspective on life and being an athlete and everything else that comes with that.
We were even talking a couple weeks ago, and recently there have been several deaths.
Oh yeah,
in the American racing environment, guys getting hit by cars and stuff. Yes, and you talked about how it wasn't really something you thought about as much, but now, especially with the kid, it's kind of changed your perspective, and even maybe some of the kind of cycling you might jump into.
Yeah, absolutely, it has. It kind of hits home a little bit for me personally, coming from United. Mm-hmm. There were now two riders in a span of less than 2 weeks that were currently racing for United or had raced for United that mm-hmm. were both killed
while training on the road. Yeah.
Ever since having Ellis, plus all of those things, it has kind of changed my perspective a little bit on terms of the amount of training hours and the time away, being off by myself, because really anything can happen. And so I've had a love-hate relationship with indoor training, but I decided to go ahead and buy another one. I'd done it for a couple of years back, but I was so burnt out on it that I just got rid of my other one. But I'm looking at the trajectory of where my training is going, mm-hmm. that is going to be a way that I can still get in the training hours that I need to compete at this level, but in a manner that's not putting me and my family in as much risk. I'm not going to be at near as much risk as I would going out and training on the road. And again, I love training outside, and I always will. Yeah. But if I can split time in between the two, that gives Maddie some assurance that she knows where I am at all times.
Yeah, it changes things.
Oh, yeah. No, it 100% does, but at the same time, that's a sacrifice I am 100% willing to make for the sake mm-hmm. and security of my family, because if something happens to me, I can't provide for my family and protect my family because of,
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Going from, you were on United the previous year.
Yes.
Which is a domestic elite team. So they get into some different professional environments. But this year, being on a pro team, mm-hmm. what was, if you could, I'm sure the lessons you learned this year, you could fill a book with. But
absolutely.
If you're going to highlight two or three things that kind of stood out to you that was different, that you had mm-hmm. to get comfortable with or do better, or mentally or physically,
right?
Obviously it can be harder.
Oh yeah,
right? We 100%. Know it's going to be faster, but the character of how that race happens versus how it did as an amateur or on mm-hmm. United, what would be two or three things you would kind of pull from?
So our first race of the year was Speed Week, and that was obviously
you did okay there.
Yes, I did okay there, ended up winning by 4 points over Danny Summerhill, who is arguably the best all-around Criterium racer this season, with multiple wins, and he won the ACC. Anyway, the learning curve was incredibly steep in that I learned from that series what it was like to race sound tactically rather than trying to out-muscle people, because at that level, everybody is as strong as you are,
right.
And what comes down to what separates a first and a second place is tactical decision making. Mm-hmm. So energy expenditure is huge.
Yeah.
And that's why when I'm giving advice to people, I say positioning is everything, more so in the case for more of a sprinter type. But at the same time, there's a lot of truth.
There's
to
even subtle positioning. If you're a breakaway guy, paying attention to who's going to go and knowing how to launch your own. And I think it's something that I've noticed, in racing, not at that level, but that there's a lot of people who, if they're naturally strong, mm-hmm. their first couple categories they're in, they race dumb.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to race smart. And then later on, that when it gets hard, sometimes they don't know how to recalibrate.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Because it turns into a skills contest, not just a fitness contest. And so that's what you're saying was one of the major things you noticed was...
Absolutely.
You couldn't just go out there and pound sand. No, you had to be get smarter and smarter and smarter.
Well, and so it doesn't matter that if, you know, if my power was, you know, 400 something watts for an hour and I got fifth and the guy who won did 300 watts.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No.
Like
he won.
he won and I lost, right? Yeah. So I've had to learn how to use my strength at the right time and at the right moment, looking at, you know, the course, the, you know, the, you know, all the turns, everything that comes with that comes with pre-race preparation, right? You're studying, pinch point areas. Mm-hmm. You're looking at, what course suits you, what part of the course suits you, where you feel like you can do the most damage. So that was and is still a huge learning curve for me. Mm. This probably the biggest point of growth that I noticed this season was I learned how to race and be fully committed to the team goal, which is I got a very good taste of that during my time with United when I was racing with Doug. Like I learned how to race for him and how to get him in position to win.
Yeah.
And so I got that on a much more wider scale with the amount of races that we were doing, with, you know, the caliber of fields that we were racing against. You have to race as a full unit in order to put the rider that you are racing for in position to win. And that's something that I had not necessarily previously had like a ton of experience doing, but I was able to use that little bit of experience I had with United to bring onto the ButcherBox program, and we had a lot of success because of that.
Yeah,
it was hard because we had so many close calls.
Yeah,
so many times throughout
the
season,
man,
and so
you're right there.
Yeah, so many times we were right there, and Dusan was the rider that we raced for most of the time. He's a great finisher, and we did everything we could to get him in position. Looking at the course, most courses are not breakaway courses,
right?
With the exception of Speed Week, which is hard racing and hills and all that stuff each day. But
every day, just the amount of races turns into a breakaway scenario.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so I learned what it was like to help my team navigate the difficulties that you experience during a race, to where people are trying to crowd your train. You know, you're hip checking, there's shoulder checks, there's bumping bars, things like that. So learning how to navigate racing for the team with a new sense of physicality that it comes with these races. And that was a huge steep learning curve that I had not.
Amateur is not nearly as aggressive as professional environment.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there were so many close calls for me this season. Thankfully I have not had a crash, knock on wood, this season, but, just the physicality of racing at this level is a very real thing, and you have to be ready for it, because, you know, 30-40% of the guys that I'm racing against, all they do is race bikes. And so they are willing to take risks that I've personally have never seen before when it comes to getting themselves in position to contest for the win. And so being exposed to that was a huge eye-opener as well. But at the same time, I spoke about this in a recent talk that I did. There's a concept in psychology, and I believe it's called systematic desensitization, to where if you continuously expose yourself to an uncomfortable stimulus, it eventually becomes comfortable.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, so continuous.
That's what my wife calls marriage.
Yes. Great example. great example. But after being continuously exposed to the physicality behind these events, you start to learn how to navigate that a lot easier than you would just as a newbie coming into all of this. And so those would be the couple of things that I've learned.
Picked up the
most this season. And it's just been an incredible experience. And I'm just super
grateful. If you were going to describe what you would see as the character of the current professional racing environment, you know, like obviously there's the UCI, right? Like it's
right.
All the stuff that happens in Europe and all the major races and the professional environment here as a continental team. And there's been some teams that have tried to go for that, and it can be seen as a development ground.
Yes.
But sometimes it feels like it's the only point for some teams is really just killing it in America, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So how would you kind of describe being up close what that, what the growth, what the enthusiasm, what the potential, what are the good things you see coming out of the racing
environment
right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, we saw this season, we saw the development of the NCL, and we saw in with what Justin and Corey Williams are doing with this whole crit championship thing. Like, there's so many different avenues that are trying to, like, break into the American circuit along with, you know, the American Criterium Cup, which had been established already, which is what USA Crits used to be.
Yeah.
And so there's been, I think there's been a lot of, I think, competing, if I had to try to put this the right way here, there's a lot of competing ideas when it comes to trying to promote and give riders and fans the best experience. And that's been something that's been a huge eye opener for me this season, is seeing like all of that stuff kind of come to fruition. I'm trying to think of the right way to put this here. Different, like, it. My perspective is going to be different from somebody who has raced in the NCL, right? Who has been associated with any of the teams that have been created by Legion of Los Angeles and their entire organization. So they'll be able to provide a different perspective on that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, There is something to be said to introduce change, but at the same time, if you've had something that has worked and that had like all of what USA Crits used to be, right? So we had the evolution of the American Criterium Cup, right?
Yeah.
And so with all these competing competing ideas and funding that comes with that, you know, it's easy to think, well, instead of trying to create, you know, a ton of new stuff, which at one time is good, change is good, but at the same time, if you've had an already established series that is working, why not use those resources, right, to help back and fund teams and to help with
marketing exposure, right?
Events,
like getting the word out there so that you can actually get to where people want to. Not like just like you go to a race and it's not just the racers there, right? Like it's people coming to watch and have that entertainment side of seeing the race and seeing it break down and all that kind of stuff.
Oh,
and
for sure, yeah.
Pouring into that even more.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but there are a lot of competing ideas out there right now about what that should look like. And it's all around Criterium. Do you see road racing going away?
I don't see road racing 100%.
Even 10 years ago, there were several, two or three day events that, you know, it'd be a road race, a time trial, and a Criterium. But you don't see that at all anymore. It's all just Criterium stuff.
Yeah, it is. And so there were only, with the exception of the two World Tour teams, Trek and EF, they're 100% committed to a European calendar.
Yeah.
But there were only, if I'm not mistaken, I think there were only two other teams in the U.S. that had a UCI Pro Continental status, which was Legion of Los Angeles and Project Echelon. And so I don't believe, I think they traveled a little bit. I know Echelon traveled over to Mallorca and did Challenge Mallorca at the beginning of the season. And so that's really, from what I understood, one of the only times that they fully utilized that UCI Pro Conti status. Legion is actually dropping their UCI Pro Conti status going into this upcoming season, I believe. And so there's a lot of money that has to be behind a team like that, because a lot of the licensure stuff is like purely money based, right?
It's expensive.
Yeah, it is. And so, but if you have the funding and backing to have that UCI Pro Conti status to be able to give your athletes the opportunity to race in Europe, heck yeah, do it.
Yeah.
I want to see that happen. But at the same time, what we have the opportunity to do is provide riders like me the opportunity to not feel pressured to have to go and race in Europe, but at the same time, we can provide a similar experience racing here domestically in the U.S. And so there are still some longstanding events that I would love to see continue to stay. Redlands Tour of the Gila, Joe Martin Stage Race, Green Mountain Stage Race up in Vermont, which is at the end of the season. I personally love stage events because there's so few and far between.
Yeah.
Of course, we had the Tour of California that was around forever,
and
some other races that I can't remember the names of that used to have multi-day events.
Well, the Pro Challenge up in Colorado.
Absolutely. So I don't think road racing is going to go away, but it does seem like it's kind of been on the back burner recently. Mm-hmm. And I personally would love to see more stage events.
Yeah.
I think it provides a unique experience for the riders
mm-hmm.
who aren't criterium specialists in order to truly like see what their potential is.
Well, yeah,
right?
If you're going
to
be a pro right now in America, coming up, you're not going to have a lot of road races you can show on your resume.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's all criteriums.
It is.
If you do actually break that bubble,
uh-huh.
all of a sudden, it's road racing all the time, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, and so it changes. Oh, yeah. It changes the dynamic of a team completely. It changes the kind of riders that the team brings in. And so I for a while, I didn't consider myself purely a criterium racer, but at the same time, due to the environment of bike racing in the U.S. right now that's
yeah.
more criterium focused, I'm finding that in order for me to have success at this and to make a career out of this, I need to be good at racing criteriums.
You have to be, yeah.
Like you have to be. And so that's changed my training a little
yeah.
bit to where I was training, yeah, more for like longer events. I did some gravel
yeah.
a couple years ago. So, but at the same time, you have to tailor your personal training to the kind of events that you'll be
yeah.
racing for.
Yeah.
And so that's what I experienced this season. It's been great.
That's
and
cool.
So, yeah,
it's very cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's been awesome. So,
Going into 24, mm-hmm. are we locked and loaded?
Yeah. So, we've kind of entered the contract negotiating period. But yes, we are locked and loaded. And
so it's Butcher Box.
Yep.
Yeah. Again. Okay.
Yeah. We're gonna. I'm gonna move forward with the team.
Yeah.
They provided me with the backing and the opportunity for me to go ahead and compete at these national events. And I love the environment, the kind of relationship that I was able to form with all the guys over
yeah.
the course of the season. And so I think we'll be bringing in some new riders. at the same time, it's an opportunity to form those new relationships and mm-hmm. form new team dynamics and stuff like that. And so I'm just super stoked on it. I'm extremely excited.
Yeah,
so.
I can tell. It's always funny here at the bike lab because, I'll be back in my office or something. And then I hear road shoes clicking.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, Evan's here.
Yep, that's me.
And you come back, and then I get to hear all the cool stories about the racing you've done, the things that are happening.
Yeah.
You talked about how track cycling might be popping up on your radar a little
yeah,
more.
Yeah, man. So one
you're
of my...
Your coach is Chris Carlson,
yes,
right?
So Chris Carlson's my coach right now, and he has a long tenured history
oh, yeah.
of being multiple time national champion on the track, especially when it comes to pursuit. Team Pursuit, he was in the running for qualifying for the Olympics in mm-hmm. Team Pursuit back when he was in his prime. I think it was in the 90s. But that was always something that really interested me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in terms of the training that would be required for that, it would be a lot more in a controlled environment. So like what I was talking about.
Right,
like,
yeah, you're not out on a road.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
You're out on a track.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so it would allow potentially my family to actually see me race
yeah.
in an environment to where they can actually see me rather than, I mean, I wouldn't bring a spectator to a 5-hour road race. Like,
no.
That's not...
no.
Like, they pass once and they're like, all right, that was... 2 seconds of
yeah,
and then you hardly ever see him again, right?
Yeah,
so
they just leave.
But yeah, no, that's something that's really excited me the last couple of weeks, months, and I have a couple of my teammates who compete on the track professionally. Ryan Jastrap, mm-hmm. Eddie Huntsman, that compete with the national team, that go mm-hmm. with training camps and stuff like that. And so I kind of feel bad because I've asked them so many questions. I feel like they're like annoyed with me at this point, but at the same time, they're really open to it. They've been really
yeah.
good sports about it.
That's cool to have that connection on the team you're on. So
oh, for sure.
Like, you know where to go and how to, like,
yeah.
Cause there's like all kinds of rules and stuff. Like I don't
is, yeah.
understand a lot of it. So
yeah, no, it's cool, man. I love hearing their experiences when it comes to that. If it's something, especially something that I'm super interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know what the timeline on that's going to look like. I would love to maybe give it a shot once this season and see if it can happen. The nature of the U.S. national track team is going to be interesting right now because we're going into an Olympic year,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's going to be highly competitive and.
Yeah.
I'm fairly convinced that they're going to have, in terms of like team pursuit, they're probably going to have the team already selected at that point into the next couple of months. And so, you know, realistically, that's really not in the cards at the moment. But at the same time, I would love to just use this time to just get experience
all the major players and even some of the extra players that are in that world are going to be really hyped up for it this year. So it's a great year to jump in just because all the resources will be there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so, I'm gonna utilize my teammates and their experiences and the connections that they have to hopefully be exposed to that opportunity. I'm really excited to give individual pursuit a go along with team pursuit, and I'm just really excited to see what happens, man. It kind of adds a refresher to your training. It gives you like new goals to go after. Yeah. But and again, a lot of my goals are still on the road with the team, right? Yeah. So I have to balance like, okay, what are my road goals? What are my personal goals? Mm-hmm. Right. And so I'm going to be 100% committed to the team first, right? Because they're making that investment in me.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And so, and I'm 100% committed to that and will be that way. But at the same time, if there's an opportunity to where we don't have, we have a stretch of downtime and to where there's an event on the track that, I'd like to go out and pursue, then, we'll go get it done. Yeah.
So last year, Doosan beat you.
Doosan did beat me at Cycle 66.
Cycle 66. That's coming up. That's a criterium.
It is coming up.
I'm excited about it. I'm also always nervous in like the last 2 to 3 week run up because of all the stuff that has to happen.
Yes.
And the admin lets me close down the streets for a bike race, which is fantastic. Talk about the course.
Yeah. So looking at the Cycle 66 course, it's a unique course in the sense that it's more than a four corner rectangle crit.
Yeah.
That's that I think people get tired of racing after a while because
careful, you're getting into track cycling.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's just one big turn.
Right, yeah. So basically I'm turning left twice and that's basically it. But
it does have it is an interesting so racing it last year on that course. Mm-hmm. What did you think of it?
Oh, I loved the course last year. I thought it had a great kind of real flowy in the sense that it had a long straightaway, so obviously stuff can happen. But at the same time, it was technical to the point to where that if you were to attack and try to get a breakaway established, you could get that breakaway established.
Yeah,
yeah. Pavement was super clean.
Yeah,
that's something that is I think a big deal to a lot of crit racers is kind of the surface, right?
Yeah.
So, identifying, how many manhole covers are there, like how many rough patches are there. So I was really pleased with that racing on this course last year. And it's in downtown Edmond.
Yeah.
Like it's a perfect spot to have a criterium. That's why I was so stoked on it that this event was coming back because of like, it's in downtown Edmond. That's where they have Herd on Herd and have all kinds of stuff,
art festivals. They have it's something like a couple breweries, ton of bars, ton of food.
Oh yeah,
all right there. It's a great spot.
Oh, it's a great spot for all the fans to come in. Plus, it's free for all the spectators, right? So they're not having to pay entry, right?
No.
So they can go to the brewery that's right on the course, grab a beer, and watch a bunch of dudes in spandex race their bikes, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's
I'm in.
Yeah, me too. I'm in. Yeah. Yeah, and plus with all the people coming in to do the Fondo rides in the morning, you know, if they decide to stick around, hey, why not have a post ride beer and watch a bunch of dudes race,
And or women.
I have
an announcement that's just been made official.
Oh, really?
It's Cycle 66 Crit this year is going to be the state championship.
Oh my gosh.
Category state championship.
Yes.
In November.
In November, a late season state championship. Hey. Yeah. Better late than never, man.
Everyone that had already switched to gravel is going to switch back for 1 week.
no kidding. Maybe that'll draw some of the Tulsa boys to come down and maybe skip a cross weekend and come down and race.
But it's going to be the category state championship.
Oh, that's great.
No one had done one yet, and when we realized that, we're like, well, heck, we're already doing it. It's not really a lot of extra work.
What goes into that to like have to make it like a state championship?
I think there used to be the Bicycle Racing Association of Oklahoma, BRAOK.
Yes.
It was a racing association that in partnership with USA Cycling helped with officials and structures and setup. It's gone now.
Uh-huh.
So you just communicate straight with USA Cycling. And so they have some requirements around clarifying if is it category or age based, the course you have, that sort of stuff. It's a little bit more of a, they care more about, you know, it being well supported, that kind of thing.
Right.
And then you have to adjust the flyer and they send you medals.
Oh, that's easy.
So far, easy like in the association used to be the one that from members' fees and stuff would have the money to then get like a state championship jersey.
Oh, okay.
And we're late in the game to do that now, but we are at least going to have the medals and have the designations for state champion in category-based racing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. It's nice to have that coming back. I know when I was first getting into racing, when I was Cat 5, Cat 4, and they used to have the state championship out in Sand Springs. Mm-hmm. Love that course.
That course is a good course.
Yeah, it's a good course. And I was really sad to see that kind of go away. And so we haven't had a road race state championship in a while. I think so I did one out at Skytook in like, I think it was 2021 was the last
Tall
time.
Tall Chief.
Yeah. So I think that was the last time we had a road race state championship.
I know that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think
that was the last one we've had. They did it for a couple years just at Draper, just to do one.
Oh, that's easy. It's a 13-mile loop around the lake.
13-mile loop and
easy.
Yeah.
It's got hills. And
so
stuff.
It had enough character to it to kind of be that. But there's been some changes there with speed and closing the roads and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
That could be a potential. Road races are just hard to run though.
Yeah, they are, and so that's why. Like moving forward, I think there's actually a lot of potential here, especially for like companies and investors that are looking to invest in this industry.
Yeah.
Is that criteriums are much easier to run,
and it keeps a crowd around.
It keeps a crowd around,
I mean,
right? Which means exposure.
Crits
right?
were created by bars in Europe,
exactly,
because every once in a while the people would come back. Everyone would go out. See what was going on, go back in, have a beer, go back out, and it kept them there all day.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're literally using it for that reason.
yeah, absolutely. So that's why, kind of going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, that's why I really feel like there's a lot of potential for, you know, all this new stuff that's coming out, that there can be sort of a, especially like in the Midwest where we're at here, it's like it's easy on the coast, right? So
yeah.
Like in Florida, but like, I mean, obviously Tulsa Tough, right? Biggest crit weekend in the U.S.
Oh,
like, who would have known?
That would happen in Oklahoma.
Yeah, that would happen in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's the biggest crit weekend in the U.S. for the entire calendar.
Yeah.
And so I personally would love to see more events like that. I know we had OKC Pro-Am for a while. Like, I would love to see that come back, right? I know there's a lot of stuff that has to happen in order to, like, make those events happen.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a lot in, like, Tulsa Tough has happened because Tulsa as a city wanted it to happen too.
Right.
And Chad Hodges can speak about Pro-Am, but I know one of the challenges was the city didn't care if Pro-Am happened. It was cool if it did, but they didn't care.
Yeah,
so he had to go and get
every
course at Pro-Am, he had to go to every single business owner and person that lived on it and get their approval. And one person saying no would mean he couldn't do the race on that course.
Man.
Whereas Tulsa has... You know, it's with Edmond. Edmond's a part of putting Cycle 66 together. They just say it's an event.
Oh, yeah.
And they let everyone know it's happening.
Uh-huh.
They don't go and get everyone's permission.
Yeah.
Because the city can say this is an event, just like the art festival or something else.
For so sure.
if the city's on your side, it can happen. And right now, Edmond has a lot of leadership. Daryl Davis, the current mayor, cyclist.
Yeah, that
Jan
helps.
Jan Fees and city
a
planning,
ton.
Cyclist.
Helps a
Jen
ton.
Jen Seaton, that's part of Visit OK or Visit Edmond, which is their marketing environment around the city. Cyclists. So there's a lot of pro cycling environments in there making that event happen. Because originally Cycle 66 wasn't going to be Cycle 66. They were going to do a motorcycle event.
Oh, really?
I didn't even realize that. When Mike realized that there was that character of athleticism coming through and cycling picking up and the infrastructure happening with the leadership there, they made it a cycling event.
Oh, that's so cool.
So, and it's going to be in 2026, it's actually going to be a highlight event in the country for celebrating the centennial of Route 66, because that's the weekend it happens.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so it's getting a lot of those kind of cool things.
Yeah, no, and like I said, last year whenever you had mentioned to me that you had that a criterion was being added, of course, like lights go off, right? Like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, we're finally like we're getting local racing back, right? Like,
USA Cycling Racing.
Yes, USA Cycling Racing.
Are into USA Cycling? They're not. The only reason I got on the bikes was because of the structure and setup of USA Cycling, road races, criteriums. I think it's a great system.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Is every system going to be broken at some point?
Yeah, I think it's
a great system to help riders develop and get into new opportunities to do some really cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we're bringing that kind of racing to... I'm saying this selfishly, but my hometown, right? It's nice to have that kind of, just that kind of event here locally. And of course it makes it easy from my perspective to go out and promote, be like, hey, like, please come and do this event. Like, this is a really big deal for
me. So you're definitely beating Doosan this year then.
I haven't convinced Doosan to come back yet, but we'll see.
Oh, we got to get on them.
Yeah, I know. I've been hounding him for the last month. Yeah. Well,
forfeit. He doesn't show up.
I'm trying to get him and his brother Pavly to come back, but we'll see.
We need to get a social media post that said, this is what we're going to post if you don't show up. And it'll be on cycle 66, and it's going to be, I beat Doosan.
Yep.
But it's going to be everybody in the race with
behind
that sign because he doesn't show.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, We will do that. That'll get his blood boiling for sure. It's just funny to look back on that now and just think of like all the things that happened because you weren't teammates, but now we are, right?
And you guys, the two of you, it was so fun watching you race this year because, you know, the previous years Legion's been real dominant.
Uh-huh.
And this year, what's the team that Danny's on?
Danny Summerhill.
Yeah,
so they were on a team called ACG or American Cycling Group.
Yeah.
So that was their team this year. So it was kind of an offset
Butcher
of what
Box and that team. I mean, Legion wasn't rolling deep and taking podiums like they were a couple years ago. You guys were crazy disruptive to that environment.
Yeah, and that's been one of the cool things about this season is that I think because of Legion's dominance in the past, it raised everybody's game.
Yeah.
And so now we're seeing a much more level playing field, which makes it exciting and not as predictable, right? Yeah. So you don't know what's going to happen, right? Yeah. And that was also really cool. Like, just for example, when DCC, that professional German crit team, came over to race at Armed Forces and Tulsa, that changed the whole dynamic of both race weekends. Yeah. They're, you know, extremely physical racing, and you know, it made it a much more level and interesting race, which is what spectators want to see. Right?
Yeah.
They don't want to, like, they want unpredictable racing.
Right.
Right. They want to see something that hasn't happened before. And if they continue to see that, like, they're going to come back and they're going to, like, they're going to watch the event because they're like, hey, like, we don't know what's going to happen. Right.
Right. Exactly. we went more than one round in the fight. We'd like to see seven or eight rounds in a real battle.
Oh, for sure. Right? Yeah. And so, with what I was saying about, like, with all the other like organizations like the NCL and some of the two teams that they had with the Miami Knights and the Denver Disruptors, they had a lot of major horsepower coming from, like, guys who were coming back from Europe who had been on teams that had folded. And so that also changed, that also added another dynamic of horsepower to a lot of the domestic criterium scene.
Yeah.
And it made it a lot more exciting. Of course, there's a lot of other stuff that happens, you know, behind the scenes, but it was interesting to have them have those teams, like, in the dynamic of all the races throughout the season. I think it just made it a lot more exciting for everybody to watch.
That's really cool.
No, it's just, it was incredible.
All right. Well, we're about the time we like to usually take for this podcast, about 40 minutes.
Sick.
Racing Cycle 66 will start November 5th.
Yes.
I will be on the microphone. Perrin Duncan's going to join me on microphone for a little bit.
Nice.
Nice. Everyone likes her.
Yes. So very, very, very nice voice to have.
She's really good.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah,
last year, afterwards, I lost my voice for like 4 days.
So. Yeah, I know. I felt bad afterwards because I remember, I think I checked in on you like a couple of days after the event and you were just like, dude, I'm so sick.
Yeah. Well, it was also the first year doing all that. This year is not nearly as much because we don't have to recreate, right? We know how we did it.
Yeah, for sure.
But I was there at 3:30 in the morning helping to get the trusses set up. But, you know, we don't have metal barriers. We have water barriers.
Yeah,
that's
a big deal.
But getting all those details right was really important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's even, like, it's funny you bring that up. Like, that's been brought up consistently over the course of the entire season is barriers. Like, it doesn't seem like one would think, oh, that's, you know, that's really not a big deal, but it is.
It is a big deal.
Right, because we've seen over the course of the previous years, like with those metal barriers, I mean, it's like a cheese grater.
Yeah.
And it creates a lot of injury for a lot of the athletes, and, you know, anything that we can do to, you know, prevent that from happening is a huge deal. And so I commend you and the rest of the media team and management team for Cycle 66, you know, moving forward doing that, because that does nothing but promote rider safety. And, and at the end of the day, we want a safe race. Like, that's
and this is also probably the only crit you've ever done that's also the finish line for a Fondo ride.
Yeah, that's true.
That's kind
of
cool,
it's cool. And it gives those Fondo riders, like, that feeling of, that, like, taste. That taste, like, oh, we're crossing the finish line.
We're crossing the real finish line.
Yeah, that's cool. And so that was a really cool idea. I don't know who came up with that idea. Oh, it was you?
Well,
thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for instituting that idea. That was
super cool.
It could
have been terrible. So, I mean, I'm glad that it worked out and it was as smooth as it was, and getting ready to go at it again this year. Well, Evan, thank you so much for... We always have these kind of conversations. I just got to record you this time.
Oh, man, yeah. No, this is like anytime I get the opportunity just to have a conversation with people is just huge. And it's been so cool just over the course of the previous years, like from where I came from, which was a burned out college distance runner, to now being here. It's like it's so crazy to think about. And it's so funny that we're having this conversation right now, because – 5 years ago, this was the first shop that I came to when I was here in Oklahoma City when I was a freshman at Oklahoma Christian.
There you go.
Right. So you were the first shop that I came to here to get some bike maintenance. I just had a 20-something pound felt Z, you know.
You were still 100. Going off the front of Cat 5 races, though. Like, as soon as you start racing the bike, everyone's like, what the hell is happening?
It's funny.
Who is this guy?
I distinctly remember my first crit, because I had bought... a Stars and Stripes kit online, because because I was like, I love that kit.
Yeah.
And so I show up to Wheeler in a Stars and Stripes kit. No one's ever seen me before, and everyone's like, who the hell is this guy? Like,
yeah.
Because someone from here had just won a national championship.
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was, but someone from here had just won.
I know that Heather.
Was it Heather?
Two Criterium National Championships back to back, and it might have been during that time.
Yeah,
That would have been her. And on the Criterium, she's the only one besides you that's had a chance at doing something like that. Oh no, who's the guy up in Tulsa? Had a Masters National Championship last year, and I got on the podium this year. But it wouldn't have been that recent.
Was it Cagle?
No.
Cagle.
It's the other guy. I'm totally blanking on his name. But anyways,
yeah.
Showing up in Stars and Bars, not knowing the etiquette and the culture, dude, that's...
That's
big time Cat 5 move.
Oh yeah. No, I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but I was hooked from the first time that I raced that crate. It was just so weird.
I love that. We need to get a picture of that. A picture of that, you in that jersey.
It's on my Instagram. I got second place because Chris Holiday beat me in the sprint.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. But no, it's just like going back to what you were saying, like coming and rising up through like the ranks here locally, like with your investment in this shop and OKC Velo, and giving me that platform while I was here. Like to go and then race for United and now to race for ButcherBox. Yeah. Like, hear me when I say, Tony, like, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you, man. Like,
oh, thank you.
Like, it's like your willingness to give riders an opportunity is the difference. And so just know that from the bottom of my heart, like, I so deeply appreciate your investment in me and giving me the opportunity to like be in this position. And it's cool, man, because what this does is it opens opportunities for other people. Right.
It does. It always shows that it's possible.
It does.
Right. And that it's possible. And that's what's amazing about a bike shop is we get a chance to be a part of so many different stories.
Oh.
Right. So
100%.
Getting a chance to be a part of yours over the last few years, it's the easiest thing in the world to help support something like that. Because you're hungry and you're focused and you're going and doing it. And we've had that happen before through our environment, but you're definitely the one that has stood out the most.
Well, I appreciate
so
that.
So far.
Man, just like I said, I'm so thankful just to be here and just to have the opportunity to do it. You know, I'm like I said, I still consider myself an average Joe, man. I have a full-time, I have a full-time job. Yeah. I have a family that loves me. And, but at the end of the day, it's so cool to have this as part of your story. It makes you,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, and I know we've had discussions about that before. It's like, this is part of me.
Yeah.
And it always will be.
Yeah.
And so it's just cool to just sit back and just like think about like where you came from, what you had to do to get to where you are now that you're here, like, you know,
making the progress.
Yeah. 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 It's just, and it's important to to enjoy that process and build up, because it's easy to get so wrapped up in, I have to be at this kind of caliber at this specific time, doing these specific power numbers, doing with this equipment. I'm just like, it's so easy to get wrapped up in that, that you don't enjoy the process behind it. Like there's a build that comes with that, and you develop wisdom going forward.
Yeah.
And so that would be my challenge to anybody who hears this, is be like, hey, be patient.
Yeah.
Be patient. Ask questions.
Yeah.
Like, people will bend over backwards to help you if you have the right attitude.
Right.
Like, right. It makes it so easy.
Much easier.
Much easier. And so, anyway, that's my challenge to anybody who's listening, is be humble and ask questions.
Okay.
Okay.
You heard it here first.
You heard it first. you heard it first, folks.
Well, we'll see you out at Cycle 66, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? This needs to be, like, you're so dialed into the pro racing scene. I think about all those conversations that we've had. I'm actually setting up a studio in my office so I can just kind of have these kind of podcasts on the fly, and we're just going to have like a, not racing weekly, but when talking to Evan about the race weekend you were just at,
and
the
dynamics going now. 100%.
We can get into some crit drama. We can tag some people.
That's a whole nother can of worms, man.
I know. That's why we need more than just one episode, right?
Oh, yeah. We need a series.
A series.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Well, man, just let me know, and I'll
let you know, and we'll get it done.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, dude.
That sounds good, Tony. Mm-hmm. Thanks, man. Appreciate you.